March 21st, 1982. The first Group A race with the new rules just kicked off. It started with an impressive pole position secured by Umberto Grano and Helmut Kellners in their 1981 BMW 528i. 43 teams have shown up to race under the revised Group 2 rules, meaning if they got on the track, they had to sell 5,000 of whatever they were driving. The BMW sedan was head-to-head with Jaguar XJs, Opel Monzas, Alfa Romeo Alfettas, and Audi GT5Es. For the first time in European touring car history, the Camaros and Mustangs weren't even competitive. As the laps went on and on into the 60s, then the 70s, then 80s, the cars that used to score top places on the podium vanished into the background. Grano and Kellners stayed at the front of the pack in their six-cylinder, four-door 528i, even as a V12 Jag took the fastest lap. They flew through the finish line with an RX-7 just on their rear. The next non-BMW was almost 10 seconds behind Grano and Kellners. On that cold spring day, one thing stood out crystal clear. There wasn't a Mercedes in sight. How did a 100-year-old automotive Cold War suddenly turn hot? How did a new set of rules handed down in 1982 result in some of the greatest cars ever sold showing up at dealerships worldwide? How did evolution after evolution of engines, suspensions, and body panels wind up creating the current car upgrade system we see in video games? Ooh, little twist. Well, we're about to find out all this and more during Pass Gas, BMW vs. Benz Group A. It's the finale. Meow.
Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about ports.
Big thanks to Lexus for sponsoring this episode of Pass Gas. Visit lexus.com/motorsports to learn more about Lexus racing and get all the details on upcoming races.
Hey, big thanks to Indeed for sponsoring this episode. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/passgas. That's right. Go to Indeed.com/passgas right now. Support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/passgas. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hello. Welcome back to Pass Gas, everybody. It's Nolan Sykes here talking to you through the microphone. today is our final part of BMW versus Mercedes Group A racing. It's finally culmination. We've got all the exposition. We've got the background we need. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's all about racing.
I was missing last week, so I missed.
You were missing. You were out. You went on a hike. We didn't hear from you. We had to airlift you out of the Los Angeles forest. What were you doing out there?
I was looking for frogs.
For frogs. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Frogs.
Frogs are in season right now with all the rain that happened. So
frogs are in season.
Yeah. A lot
like
of frogs.
Strawberries.
Yeah. those voices you hear with me today, Jimmy Hilton across the table from me. What's up, dude?
How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. I thought you were wearing a Gran Turismo shirt.
No,
I thought so too.
Racing Beat Mazda.
Yeah.
Nice.
I like
nice
how high it is.
Pole.
The logo.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice one.
It's above the nips.
Right above the nips. Yeah.
Nice.
That's what I like in a shirt.
Yeah. I was looking for some like vintage Gran Turismo merch last week because, you know, they got cool logos.
Game. Yeah.
It's a good game.
Yeah.
It's hard to find.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. Yeah. I found a while back, I lost the auction on it. It was the guidebook for the first game.
Oh, no kidding.
Sealed
oh
in packaging, and nice. It had all these stickers in it. It came with a huge sticker sheet.
Whoa.
That I thought
whoa
was pretty cool.
That's so nerdy.
Yeah. Lost it by like $5.
Because
I forgot to put the bid in.
Oh, no.
And that other voice you hear back on the podcast.
Joe.
What up?
Joe Weber.
Keep it milked.
Keep it milked.
That's my new thing because I'm a dad now.
You are a dad.
How's that going?
Dude, what's that like?
It's exhausting. We have a fussy baby.
Yeah.
But the good news is he's, as of today, five weeks.
5 weeks.
He just slept 4 hours for the first time.
Wow.
It was crazy. I thought he was dead for a second, and I was like, oh, no. He was breathing. He's thriving.
Oh, man, I'm so neurotic. I just know when we have a kid, whenever that is, I'm going to be, like,
just thinking the child is in danger at all times.
Dude, every turn, like there's so many things that can go wrong. And, you know, I was like scared to pick him up at first because he's wobbly neck.
That would be me.
And then, you know, there's so much like, but you just have to keep doing it. And every day you learn. When I would come into the office before.
Because we have some other parents in the office. Gavin, you know,
Gavin,
producer Gavin.
Our producer.
Nine months ago. Yeah.
Gavin's got a 9-month-old. But I'd be like, man, I'm really tired. And the parents would be like, just wait, buddy. I'd be like, shut up. You don't get to gatekeep being tired. And they do. They absolutely, parents absolutely do get to gatekeep being tired because I get an average of like 3 to 5 hours of sleep a night.
Oh, no. Dude.
Just, you have to just keep going until it gets better.
I mean, man, you know, Chloe and I getting married pretty quick here. By the time this comes out, it'll be very soon.
Yeah.
And
they're going to be baking the cake the day this comes out.
That's probably true. We were having dinner with some friends that live out east. They came to visit and we went to like Porto's. Really great bakery slash
restaurant.
That's
a great spot.
Yeah, I love Porto's. Anyway, they brought their 2-year-old child with them. And I feel like I have a couple friends who have like 2-year-old kids. And I feel like when I'm in the vicinity of a 2-year-old, I'm like, that's when I'm like at my least, like,
chill.
Not least chill. That's when I want to have a child the least.
Oh.
Because they're just like, they're just running everywhere. Like this kid took some of his food and like was just mashing it into the table. And I'm like, they're going to have to clean that up. Not the staff, but like the parents. It's like, I want to have kids at some point.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just, I'm less enthusiastic about it.
And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I can't wait until he can like support his neck
Fair.
And like
yeah.
can grab stuff and knows that he has hands.
Yeah.
Cause like I was trying to feed him last night and he's all fussy. And I'm like literally just trying to get the bottle like into his mouth and he's like hitting it and swatting it away. Yeah. And I was like, you know, you're hungry. Just let me like,
you need to eat,
up, please. And I was just like, got covered in piss and shit and puke.
Yeah.
And like, Emily thought I was like, she came out to relieve me at like 4 a.m. and I was like, just in my underwear. Cause I like took off my milk soaked shirt and like my pee soaked underwear, whatever.
You'd seen some things.
Yeah. And she was like, oh man, that must've been rough. And I was like, no, it was like a great night. Like he slept. That's all I care about.
Yeah. So, wow. I mean, we're super happy to have you back, Joe.
Yeah. Max got me this baby Carlos baby on board sticker.
That's a good one.
Oh, like, dude, that movie's so funny, dude.
Yeah. It's so random that he found a baby in Vegas.
That never happens to me when I go to Vegas.
Yeah.
I have a question. I don't know if you have much time to watch movies or TV or anything like that, but.
No, it's like zero. Like, I put on baseball because I can like zone out and come back to it. And it's the perfect thing. But like anything with a narrative, you're like you have one ear watching TV, one ear like waiting.
Maybe
for
I'll wait
to
a couple years to ask. But it's like I'm thinking like movies that deal with themes of family and children and parenting and stuff like that are probably going to hit so different now. It's going to open up a whole new spectrum of cinema enjoyment.
Every depiction of giving birth is so wrong. Like Emily did it without an epidural. She did it without, spent months doing what's called hypno baby, which is just like meditation to help you get through the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped her out a ton, but like it was still really intense.
Without an epidural.
That's
no epidural. Yeah.
No drugs.
Well, she did. There is one drug. It basically just induces you, though. It's like synthetic oxytocin. It's called Pitocin.
Pitocin, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it literally just like gets your, like tells her body to start labor.
Mm-hmm.
But like the depiction of birth is like super wrong.
Yeah.
It's not just like.
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't have
you did this to me.
8 hours in a movie to, or I don't know how long.
Yeah. Labor it was like 22 hours labor.
Damn.
It's that's not, like Das Boot. Am I right?
There's labor and then there's active labor. So it was like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours of active labor, which is good. Mm-hmm. Like I don't do well with blood. So Emily was like, you have to be there. and I obviously really wanted to be there, but I was scared I was going to faint.
That would be
chill
me.
Outside yeah. with my Switch.
You know, I brought my Switch.
I'm going to play Animal Crossing right now.
No, it was Untitled Goose Game.
Oh, okay, that's a good one.
I'm really trying to figure that out, but my instincts as like, I just had to be there for her and like be there holding her hand and stuff and holding her hips mm-hmm. and legs, whatever. It was like not a big deal.
Yeah.
If you're wondering, if you don't watch Big Three, I have a handlebar mustache right now. Yeah.
You look sick.
I'm in my total phase, my Orange County Choppers phase right now.
Jimmy, any insights into fatherhood that you'd like to share before we start here?
I'm good. I like my dog. You know, me and my girlfriend, we got our dog and our turtle too. Can't forget our turtle. Yeah. I love my little turtle.
I'm in my turtle phase. You're in your total phase.
So, that's it for me. I'm not thinking about kids. I'm thinking about what wheels I'm going to buy next week. That's what
the
wheel
estate business yeah. never sleeps.
Booming.
Booming. Okay. So, oh, by the way, episode 250.
Oh, that's
is
a milestone.
It?
Yeah, this is it.
Whoa.
Big milestone. Thank you guys so much for listening. Yes. If you've been with us for a long time, I really cannot overstate just my appreciation for you sticking with us and listening for all these years. I mean, it flies by for us. And I really feel, you know, the past 4 years, 5 years have really flown by, I think, for a lot of people. But to do this for almost 5 years is I would say an accomplishment for sure. Mm-hmm. But also the fact that you have stuck with us for so long.
Absolutely.
Is just incredible. And I love podcasting. I say this probably every other week, though. But like, I truly, truly love podcasting as a medium and just as a way to vector conversation, but also I love listening to podcasts. Mm-hmm. I just love the form, and you know, I've been listening to podcasts in many different forms since like 2011, I think, is like when I got into it. And ever since I started, you know, shout out to Jay Moore and More Stories and Your Mom's House back in the day, you know, like I was super into those
not now but
like, you know, honestly, like that whole, you know, More Stories, After Disaster, you know,
Last Pot on the Left.
I got into them like at least 6 years ago. But like, there are just so many great shows out there, and I'll always be doing this. You know,
yeah,
I love podcasting.
I love
so much.
Doing it. I think it's super rewarding when I get DMs from people who are like, "I just found out about your podcast. I binged 180 episodes or something crazy. Like my commute is 6 hours, and I listen to 4 episodes."
But I mean,
whatever.
That's what I would do too. So you know, cool. Like when I, you know. Discovering the podcasts in college, and then, you know, when I started working in the machine shop back when I moved home to Atascadero, it's like, that's all I would listen to is just podcasts all day. And I never forget like how much I relied on podcasts just to me through my shifts and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know where I'm going with this. Thank you very much.
Big props to you guys.
Yeah, seriously. So thank you. Now let's finish up. Mercedes versus BMW in Group A. Let's do it. So while Mercedes didn't bother to show up to the first real Group A race at the Temple of Speed, aka the Autodromo Nacional di Monza, or
what if we
Monza,
kissed at the Temple of Speed?
Well, BMW almost didn't show up either. The Bavarian boys were holding tight for the 1983 homologation of their new racing baby, the 635 CSI in 1983. So the pickings were slim to build a Group A car out of.
I love that car.
There's
a certain
very cool.
type of purple that car comes in that is my favorite purple of any purple.
Purple.
These cars look like sharks. That's what I always see them as. They look like a little shark.
So they went with the 1981 BMW E28 528i. Which had just started rolling off the factory line in Dingolfing.
My favorite type of golfing.
Right out of the gate, the almost stock 528i shocked even the BMW execs, okay? The suits, the vests. Team Eggenberger took the pole position at Monza for the first leg of the European Touring Car Championship at 2 minutes 11 seconds, beating the V12 Jaguar's fastest lap by a full second and a half.
What do you guys think of eggs on burgers?
A little messy.
Yeah.
Doesn't add much.
The yolk runs down your hands.
It's already like a rich meat, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And an egg is so rich. You added a yolk to that.
Yeah.
I think if I'm putting an egg on my burger, I need bacon, first of all.
Mm-hmm. It's got to have bacon. It's got to have some jelly.
Jelly?
What? Mm-hmm.
Dude, you just lost me.
No.
What kind of jelly?
Like
grape?
Boysenberry or whatever. Like something sweet to to
I've never heard of that before. The
grease of the bacon and also the richness of that yolk.
Okay, I'm trying to grow as a person. I might try this burger.
There was a restaurant in Atascadero called Dave's Grub Shack.
Oh, nice.
And me and Cody would go there all the time, and they had a burger called a heart attack, and I think that was kind of like the principle of that thing was like bacon, egg, jelly.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
I've heard that's what the BMW executives like, besides Group A racing.
Eggs and burgers.
No
so,
burgers on our eggs.
Egg and burger got their 528i's straight from BMW as semi-welded shells that were already set up with glass, locks, lights, and grills. They came pre-painted in factory colors, and all the basic wiring was already there. So, Team Eggy dug in and dropped in a blueprinted M30 BMW race engine in place that had already been tweaked and teased to produce 240 horsepower out of the 2,800 cubic centimeters available.
2.8 liters.
Yeah.
I love when factory teams get like a shell.
Bodies in white, basically.
Yeah, bodies in white. That's what it's called.
That's what we're talking about here.
So cool.
You sound like Hannibal Lecter. I love bodies in white. Great guy, Hannibal Lecter.
Fast forward to the end of the race, and the entire podium at Monza is filled with 528i drivers. Not too bad for a car that Modern Motor magazine described as, quote, lurches back annoyingly and messily during cornering.
Just like that egg burger.
Yeah, when I eat an egg burger, I lurch back annoyingly and messily because of all the yolk that squirts out.
Around 700,000 5 Series were sold between 1972 and 1981. So by the time the fans watched the trio of Beamers stomping every other challenger across Europe, they couldn't even buy a new one from the dealer. So there you go.
They were selling like hotcakes.
We'll be right back after this bit of housekeeping.
As soon as the 1982 season was over, BMW enthusiast racing teams shoved their 528i's straight out of their garages to make room for the new golden child of Bavaria, the 635 CSI. All the Deutschmarks were riding on this new Group A platform, crowned by BMW. Because remember, the 528i, that was just kind of like a stopgap measure. Mm-hmm. The plan at BMW was that the 635 CSI would swing in as the destroyer of all those V12 Jags dominating the straights at the European Touring Car Championship. While the stock 635i showed up to the scene with around 175 horsepower, the master engineers over at Alpina were able to squeeze just shy of 300 horses out of the big inline six. With other suspension modifications and a tight transmission, the 635 CSI was already super competitive.
God, I bet this car is so fun to drive.
By the time Mercedes finally fielded a car in Group A, the 1983 ETCC season was wrapping up at the incredibly fast and incredibly undulating Circuit Zolder in Belgium. The teams running the 635 CSI platform had been absolutely dominating race after race, only getting reined in by the Volvo 240 turbo bricks. But when Mercedes finally showed up to play, it was almost too late. The Surge Power Racing Team showed up with a V8 Mercedes 450 SLC that had been having some success in long-distance rally races.
Reminds me, there's Serge Tankian just opened up a coffee shop in my neighborhood.
Serge Tankian?
Oh, Serge. I thought it was Tankian. Well, the guy from System of a Down.
Yeah, Sugar!
Sugar! I just listened to that song this morning.
What's it called?
I thought it was going to be called Wake Up, but it's called Kavat.
Kavat.
Which might be coffee in Armenian.
Yeah, it might probably. That makes sense. Cool, man. So when the dust settled and the flags had been flown, the Mercedes placed 10th after the first 7 places were filled by 635 CSI drivers. So we're not off to a great start here with Mercedes.
Mercedes is not happy right now.
They are straight up not having a good time.
Do you watch Real Bros of Simi Valley?
I actually don't.
Oh, I think you would love it.
Didn't they come out with
a movie recently, right?
Yeah. So. But that's like the signature phrase of one of the dudes.
Straight up not having a good time.
Like, I'm feeling a little irked, or at least like irked adjacent, and then these guys bring in their bad vibes? Bro, I'm straight up not having a good time.
The boys at Benz weren't too happy with the SLC's performance, and they were even less happy with the BMW 635 CSI winning the first 7 spots in that same race. When placed beside the Alpina-prepared BMWs, the SLC was an absolute unit. It wore Husky jeans. Route 66.
It wore child's Oakleys.
Over the 3 years Ben's raced the SLC, it snatched only one victory. Mm.
That's embarrassing.
It's pretty bad, man. That's pretty that'd be discouraging.
Yeah.
That would be. Teams have been experimenting with different Benz models around Rally and other racing series, and they watched as Rally cars were starting to get smaller and smaller and more nimble, and less about the big, chugging V8 horsepower offered by cars like the Mercedes 300 SEL Red Pig.
Yeah, it's better to have a little tiny guy that can corner and go on the narrow dirt paths mm-hmm. and not kill anyone. I just watched video of the Lancia mm-hmm. Delta S4, the rally mm-hmm. car from the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Going on a go-kart track, indoor go-kart track.
Oh, I've seen that Whoa. Video.
It's insane,
yeah,
dude.
It's just like hitting every hairpin.
That's
yeah.
sick.
It's like, it's kind of like a faster, cooler version of like, you know, that they do it in Miatas in like the UK where it's like a really tight yeah. course and they're like backing up and reversing and like
a Gymkhana track.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is the most insane footage.
Benz thought they had the best idea by taking their tiny 190E platform and handing it off to the boys at Cosworth to soup it up. So we talked about this two episodes mm-hmm. ago. But there wasn't a brain in the room who thought that a 320 horsepower motor stuffed into the 190E could lose. But those big brains hadn't planned on one big thing. And that was the Audi Quattro, absolutely dominating rally racing. The introduction of Quattro all-wheel drive quickly changed the game and sent Ben scrambling to find a better use for the 190E.
Yeah, this was a huge disruptor. This comes up in every single... this is on par with the gas crisis for most mentioned...
It's like the rubber sole of racing cars.
No one talks about rubber sole. What are you talking about?
I like
about?
Rubber sole.
What kind of rubber soles do you use?
That's like sixth on most talked about Beatles albums.
But it changed it. It changed the game. It was like, hey, we're going, oh, you guys are still doing two-wheel drive rock and roll?
we're
putting sitars in our music now. That's what we're doing now. And then it set them up for, am I completely off base?
I mean, I wouldn't.
The White Album would have been a better comparison?
I think Sgt. Pepper's might be more like.
But that's like the peak of them doing that.
I don't know. I mean, this is the Quattro is the peak.
No, but this is like the first Quattro where yeah, it's like, okay, yeah. yeah it the game's
I would
game
say,
has changed
I would
now,
say
but it's not the
peak.
The Quattro is like Migos.
Okay.
Where it's like, oh, the game has changed now. We're all rapping in triplet.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're thinking of the Group B Quattro car, which is like the monster, the yellow, like in the mid 80s, like total domination.
Yeah.
I mean, this is still, they still dominated.
We're talking about game changers.
I'll take the L on this. I'll take the L on this.
Let's just go with Migos.
Okay, Migos, sure.
Rest in peace. Takeoff? Man.
When Migos.
That's a bummer. I was just thinking about that this morning.
Mercedes was still a little hesitant to fully back a racing program officially, even though the very fatal 1955 crash in Le Mans was almost 30 years in the past. Or for you guys, 2 weeks ago when we talked about that. So they unofficially slipped some support and ideas to teams like AMG, who pivoted the 190E platform from Rally to Group A to compete at the European Touring Car Championship and DTM. Group B only needed 200 cars per year to homologate, but Group A needed 5,000 cars, so Mercedes had to be on board. Mercedes debuted the 190E 2.316 at the Frankfurt Motor Show, and people were impressed, to say the least. Oh. The little car had it all. It had McPherson struts up front, anti-roll bars, complete with anti-dive, and even a bit of anti-squat for good measure. Ride height was dropped 15 millimeters up front through the use of stiffer springs and denser dampers. And out back, a self-leveling rear axle tidied up the boot.
Yeah, this is early for all that innovation. Mm-hmm.
Mercedes even slipped in a pair of Pirelli P6 booties.
Whoa.
Over the 7x15 Fuchs alloy rims, made it to some big old beefy brakes.
15x7 is pretty small for a four-door saloon, I would
yeah.
say.
Yeah, that's skinny.
Yeah.
That's skinny.
That's like a stock Miata wheel is like 15x6.5.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, Fuchs kind of look like American racing wheels, right?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, Oh, oh man. I mean, that's like the classic like Porsche style wheel.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's duh.
Like the torque thrust.
Torque thrust. Yeah. Yeah.
Five spoke design.
These are classic.
But man,
three piece.
Dude, yeah. If you go, I'm just warning you.
What?
If you go to like Lufthansa Colt.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Say that.
Yeah.
Some dudes wearing Patagonia vests. Are yeah. Beat the shit out of you.
Air cooling water is about to turn into blood.
Yeah. I'm ready for that smoke, dude. I think I could take a tech, bro.
You've got. Do you have dad strength now, do you think?
I have dad strength, and I took 3 boxing lessons, so.
Oh, shit. Watch out.
You could lift a helicopter, probably.
Honestly, that, like, the space between my shoulder blades is killing me right now from
really?
Bouncing. Mm-hmm. And my, like, rotator cuff just from, like, this. Mm. Jesus Christ, dude.
It's either that or you throwing all those baseballs.
I did go to my first baseball game for the first time in, like, a month, mm-hmm. and I ate shit. Because I've been up since 3 in the morning. Oh. And my vision was really bad, and so I was like,
"Where's the ball
out.
Coming from?"
I'm also having some rotator cuff issues. I think it all started though when me and Kanan were throwing rocks at a post out at a shoot.
Oh, somewhere. I remember that. That's yeah, a that's.
I think
a,
that's where it all started.
Yeah, you need something heavier to throw.
So it's like pretty, you know, pretty similar. You yeah, know, taking care of a baby, mm-hmm. throwing rocks with your boys.
I think yeah. every shoot we go on out in the desert, we throw rocks. At
oh,
something.
There's always rocks being thrown. Yeah, yeah.
It's fun. A sign post, another rock.
Yeah.
It's a good time. We'll be right back after this. Back to the 190E here. Cosworth created a custom light alloy cylinder head. Whoa. So lightweight cylinder head forged at their Worcester shop and shipped to Mercedes to install. The compression was boosted to 10.5 to 1, which meant special 98-octane fuel had to be used. That is pretty high compression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't get that gasoline in California.
Not going to run here.
All these very expensive changes boosted the horsepower from 136 to 185. And while that might be Honda Civic territory today, back in 1983, that's what the Z28, Nissan 280ZX, and Mustang GT were all making as well. You know, technology yeah. changes.
My Z makes, well, it made 165 new. They say that for every year that passes that you lose like 1 horsepower.
Mm.
So it's probably making like 120.
I want to know how true that is.
I know. I think we should do a video on that.
Yeah. Because if that's the case, my Miata's probably got like
50 horsepower.
Yeah.
Yeah. But mine feels like maybe around 100 right now.
That would be interesting. Maybe, yeah, we should do that. Okay. So with the idea of rallying long gone because, you know, Rubber Soul came out. Execs still had their back turned on the idea of racing the 190E. So the engineers went rogue and took the car to AMG, which is still separate from the Mercedes mothership. The fellas over at AMG started cranking and tweaking with the idea of building a Group A special just for DTM racing. They turned the 190E into a legitimate monster of the track, and it immediately started breaking records and making other drivers question life. What does that mean?
Oh, this 190E, I can't believe it. It's going too fast.
By the end of that year, 3 190Es set 3 world records at the Nardo testing facility in Italy. The Benz recorded an average speed of 154.06 miles per hour over the 50,000 kilometer endurance test.
That's crazy.
And continued to set 12 international endurance records.
Wow.
Wow.
That's, I mean, not
what
only.
What year is this? Do we know?
This is
1983.
83?
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's like a very reliable engine that can
yeah.
be revved
I
out.
I think 81 is when Japan, the first Japanese car hit 300 kilometers per hour, which is
186.
Yeah. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good.
After that, AMG pointed the 190E at DTM and Volker Weidler to drive the white car to second place.
Volker Weidler.
Volker Weidler. Thank you. In its first season of Group A, the proof was in the
blood
suspicious
pudding.
German blood pudding. And by the end of the season, Mercedes was chomping at the bit to get more involved.
More blood pudding, please.
I am at the age now where I'm actually going through the Beatles discography.
Yeah, you do hit that. It's your 30s for sure.
Yeah. Through high school and college, I was like, I don't need to listen to that. Yeah, I know it's good.
Have you ever seen Jack White? he can listen to the first second of any Beatles song and tell you
that's crazy like,
immediately what
I can do that with Real Big Fish. While Mercedes were on top of the world with their blood pudding or whatever,
is an English thing. Let's clear that up. We're not taking the L on that. It's just a joke.
They would be having bratwurst.
Bratwurst, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So while Mercedes were on top of the world with their bratwurst bruiser, BMW was brewing up a battle.
Wow, I love all the bees.
They'd watched as BMW turned their small sedan into a slayer, and they wanted to get in on that action. Paul Roche, who had been a big part of designing and building BMW's 1960s new class, something we talked about last week, specifically the 2002 turbo motor, sat down with BMW's Team M and got to work building something that would put Mercedes back in their place.
About time.
The M3 roared onto the track with an almost 300 horsepower, four-cylinder engine that immediately blew the socks off the big V8s. The first race was in Monza in 1987. Andy Rouse had been slightly fastest in his Ford Cosworth Sierra RS, at the end of the day, the first six positions were all filled with a brand new BMW M3s. Unfortunately, though, they were all disqualified for using roof metal that was a tad too thin.
That's sick.
Oh, man.
That is so cool.
Shout out to George Russell. I went to a car show to actually buy speakers. I didn't realize there was a car show going on, but the guy who was selling me the speakers was
there.
I'm running this car show.
Gotcha.
At Zimmerman Automotive Driving Museum. It's near the airport. It's actually really sick.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. They do this car meet. Shout out to Rick. But there was two Ford Cosworth Sierra RSs there, mm-hmm. and they were so sick.
That's cool.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I love the whale tail.
I love
I love that blue that they had, too. It's like a really deep blue.
So cool.
Yeah.
I think Princess Diana had one, too.
Really?
Whoa.
Yeah, I think she had a Ford Sierra.
Huh.
Can she get any cooler?
So, BMW added some cornstarch to thicken up the roof. And they were back in the track. Little cooking joke.
That there. Was good, too. Yeah, yeah. I do
Have you been
all
cooking
the time.
Lately?
No. I made a really good pasta the other week, though.
Speaking of cornstarch, we are sponsored by Tato Banshee Bones this week.
Who's that little guy on the top?
Oh,
I like
that's
him.
That's Mr. Tato.
That looks like the dude from Smiling Friends, Charlie.
Oh, he does. Yeah. Yeah.
What's he doing
Smiling
there?
Friends. Well, he's protecting against the banshee. He's coming to steal your bones. Anyway,
so the roof was thickened up with a thicker material, and they were back at the track a month later for the Marlboro Foras de Jarama in Madrid.
Imagine being the engineer after that race, and they're like, dude, the roof was too thin.
The 4 hours of Jarama.
You idiot. You made the roof too thin. What were you doing? He's like, all right, I'll get back to it. I'll make a better roof.
Ford brought the battle back a little bit, but the M3 still grabbed positions 1 through 7 with ease. Dang, shutting out the whole field. 1 through top 7.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
At this point, the other teams knew they were in trouble as BMW racked up win after win after win. Neither big V8s nor big boosty boys could compete with the clever suspension and engine of the M3, but Mercedes knew they had to try.
You got
to
try, at least.
Gotta
what are you
going
to do? Go to Disneyland Paris?
No one wants to go there.
I mean, it's just a train ride away, but, like, don't go there. You should develop your car. Keep racing. Right?
Yeah. The rules around Group A were loosening up now. Teams started including factory upgrade kits, which provided a life-saving boost for cars that weren't aging well as the competition got more stiff. And by 1988, the M3 had already dropped its Evolution 2, and Mercedes was just trying to play catch-up. The 190E 2.516 Evolution 1 debuted a new spoiler and some wide wheel arches, while also tweaking all the suspension and chassis to make it adjustable on the fly from an interior switch that you can use while you're driving.
That's so cool.
That's sick as hell. We had one of those. There's a system like that on board in high WRX.
That's cool. Dang. And this is what, 1988?
Yeah.
Adjustable suspension? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the final horsepower numbers didn't change much, but the engine was bored out and the stroke was shortened to stretch out the rev limit and improve the power curve. And this added 30 horsepower to the top end.
Oh, that's really cool.
This is a really cool era because this is when, all the homologation cars are out. You've got the BMW, the M3, you got the AMG one, and then like the Alfa Romeo one, and you could just like buy the upgrade kits like
that's sick.
That, which was like so cool.
Yeah, for the consumer at that time, that was like a great era.
Yeah, I know the Alfa Romeo one, you bought the car and then like in the trunk, it came with like parts to just like throw on the car.
Loose parts.
Yeah.
That's cool. Before anyone could catch up, AMG dropped their own power pack, making it Evolution 2 of the 190E. The horsepower is pushed to 232 horsepower, and an extreme for the time body kit was bolted on.
I love this body kit.
The rear wing was so laughably large that Wolfgang Reitzel, the head of BMW R&D, said that aerodynamics must change between Munich and Stuttgart, and that if the rear wing works, he'd redesign the BMW air tunnel.
Dude, the ASAP Rocky 190E?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Sick.
One of the sickest cars.
The next year, though, BMW did, in fact, redesign their wind tunnel. BMW and Mercedes traded victories back and forth as the evolutions continued. BMW was a bit more conservative with their evolutions. At first, it was just a new cylinder head, then some body moldings. But for the Evo 2, the M3 was totally revised. It had new pistons, new camshaft, the compression was increased, and a lightened flywheel was installed.
I believe it had a different lip, too.
Oh.
Yeah, more aggressive.
Other manufacturers were struggling to keep up, but they did manage to stay just as competitive between Opel and Alfa Romeo and other teams. But the heavy adoption of the two main BMW and Mercedes platforms outshone any real competition. Outshined, outshined, outshined. Okay.
Is that on Rubber Soul?
No, that's a Soundgarden song.
Oh.
As the insane arms race between the two big dogs of German auto manufacturing sucked up all the oxygen in Group A, other smaller teams were getting pushed out of the racing due to the increasing expenses. In a race class that was supposed to be relatable to fans using production cars, the use of things like thinner windshields and bored-out engine blocks were pushing performance beyond that of the daily driver's budget, and they were tuning out.
So it's like the Dodgers and the Yankees raising their salary cap, and then the little dogs like the Oakland A's and the Baltimore Orioles are just scrapping together.
I love going to Dodger games. I've adopted them, you know, since moving to LA, you kind of just choose them as your team.
Yeah. Who's your guy?
My guy right now, Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts too. Yeah. I love him. Dude, multi-sport athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Cool
guy.
Can't argue with how cool that is.
Also, I don't know anything about baseball.
But I'm just, my point, my...
but when they did that anime collab... few weeks ago.
Oh yeah, did you go?
No, I didn't. Tickets sold out in like two seconds.
You probably buy one on eBay though.
What?
Like whatever the merch ticket? They were giving
away. Oh yeah, no, they had It's all expensive now though. So
that's all right.
Yeah. All that to say, it has been, you're like, hell yeah, Dodgers, but then you're like looking at their salary and you got Shohei.
Dude, $700 million contract.
All these dudes making every player is like making hundreds of millions, and you're like,
they're spending $1 billion on two different pitchers.
That's so crazy.
That's a lot of Miatas.
Yamamoto, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, okay. I mean, I like winning.
I know. Yeah. Like when you're in the city, it's very fun. I love the stadium.
It's the best.
I've never been to a Dodger game.
Oh, we gotta go,
dude.
I've been here years, never been.
That's crazy. Okay. We're gonna go. It's a really, really fun time.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Okay, so back to car talk. no more baseball, sports ball talk.
That segment was brought to you by Tatol Banshee Bones.
I can't wait until we draft an Irish player.
There are a couple baseball fields in Ireland. Oh, yeah, a couple.
So by 1997, manufacturers had pretty much abandoned Group A altogether, and all that left were a few very well-funded teams that were losing interest in spending the big bucks. They were losing interest in spending big bucks, Jimmy.
I don't want to spend big bucks.
To butt heads. That's why I said big butts, because you had big bucks next to butt heads. You put it together, what do you get? You got big butts. Butt heads with other teams that were just as over the whole thing as well. In 2000, DTM was relaunched with the idea of keeping costs super low and reigniting the flame of fan interest, but it was too little too late. The magic was dead, and the golden era of Group A was destined to exist only in video games and in the future.
And in ASAP Rocky music videos.
However, the dream of Group A never died. As the 90s waned into the noughties and Alanis Morissette's Ironic and Tupac's California Love dominated the global airways, racing teams reclaimed their Group A roots through the all-new Super Touring class that was exploding across Europe. The basic rules of Super Touring were very close to Group A, but with a little more strict regulations in terms of the size of the cars and limiting the engine size to 2 liters. This created a plethora of new mini family sedans that were stuffed with naturally aspirated performance engines. It was getting more clever thanks to more modern computer-assisted fuel injection and engine control units. While the Group A shenanigans directly led to the 190E and the M3, there are also a ton of amazing cars that were birthed in the years following the demise of Group A that we wouldn't have if it never existed. Cars like the Volvo S40, the Nissan Primera, the BMW E36, and the shockingly good Audi A4, which had 15 global drivers' championship victories across the Super Touring seasons. Dang. This clash of brand new homologated touring cars that were appearing on the road alongside 70s muscle cars and 90s street cars led to a unique time in history where all of the car cultures existed at once. It wasn't unusual to see a Chevelle SS square up against a boosted Civic or a shiny new E36 at a red light. This singular moment in history created films like Fast and Furious and Gone in 60 Seconds, as well as set the stage for mainstream drift and road racing at the amateur level, where for the first time, competitors could drive their stock Civics and Camrys to local tracks to rub fenders with other would-be racers.
Hell yeah. Rest in peace, Group A, but thank you for what you brought to the table.
Group A was sweet.
Group A ran so that
DTM
Dom
could
Toretto
walk.
Could walk. DTM, that's true, yeah.
I mean, Group A was what where the R32 started, too. That's where it started eating up stuff.
Yeah.
That's where it got Godzilla. I mean, yeah. Such
very
a cool
instrumental,
series.
Yeah. Not a cornerstone necessarily, but definitely a big building block in the foundation of motorsports where we are now, for sure.
Yeah.
Not like lawnmower racing, you know?
I love lawnmower racing. Lawnmower racing Group A.
Yeah, man. That would,
it's going to pick up in like 3 years, okay? We'll just give it some time.
Yeah. Why isn't lawnmower racing like who can mow a patch fast enough? Why is it actual racing? Like,
because we got a race.
Feels like a Mario party game when you're trying to like, mow. Anyways.
We got some listener mail this week.
Oh, hey, Uncle Pimp. Wink, wink, Joe and Nolan. James is my dad, Sykes. Yeah, I know what the J stands for.
Very presumptuous.
My name is Alex. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I love the show. After a year and a half, I have finally finished catching up on past gas. From Nazi collaborators to the oil crisis to butchering every F1 name you guys read to more Nazi collaborators, I have listened to every episode.
Wow.
That's
Thank
right. You guys have been great to listen to while working on my cars or driving the 5 hours round trip to Oregon Raceway Park. Pictures attached. I have a 2011 BMW 128i track car.
Nice.
Sick. 1985 Volvo 740 wide body race car.
Oh, that thing's sick. That's a great car right there.
Oh my God. And my wife just bought a 2024 M2 that we have been autocrossing. Hope you guys.
Sweet, dude.
Hope you all have a great future. Alex.
These are some sweet cars, Alex.
These are amazing. Very cool.
I love the wing on the 240.
Yeah,
the 240 is
that
dope,
looks
dude.
Like a Group A car.
That thing's really sick.
Jeez, the wheels are amazing. Looks like it's built out.
Yeah,
holy
turbocharged.
Shit.
Looks like a nice intake plenum
you
got going right
those
there.
Those plenums, dude. I love
nice
your plenums.
Plenum, dude.
Alex,
I
what
love
wheels
your
you got? I need to know.
Yeah, dude. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Earlier when we were talking about, you know, 250 episodes now again. But this is where, you know, this is what I'm saying.
It's people
it's
like Alex people that like keep Alex us going.
Listening to a bunch of episodes. I just love it and love to hear that. And thank you very much. Again, 250 episodes. Thank you guys. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Jimmy, for being
thank
here
you,
today.
Nolan. Thank you, Jimmy.
Big thank you to our crew. We got Audrey Holden back there, Nick Giamuso, Gavin Kinzel.
And our writer for this week, Jacob Desjarlais.
Oh, yes.
Coming from the East Coast. Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you, Jacob. So, yeah. And again, thank you for listening. Here's to 250 more.
Chin chin.
Pass gas. See you next time.
Bye, y'all.